via medium wave, short wave, and satellite. This is the Dutch International Service.
Shh. Okay, everybody stand back. I'm going to do it. Here we go. Let's start the program. Uh-oh.
Let's get out of here.
Media Network, the weekly communications magazine with Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Hello, Jonathan Marks and I are back again with half an hour of developments in the world of international broadcasting. And after two specials, one from the Broadcasting Museum on April the 5th, and last week's show from Washington, D.C., we have some catching up to do. By the way, our colleagues in the Frequency Planning Department are trying to improve some reception problems on 6020 and 9840 kHz with our North American service. In the meantime, we're getting reception reports as a result of our appearance on the 60-meter tropical band. At 2130 UTC, we're using 4965 kHz for our Indonesian service. The transmission originates from the Hyatt facilities in Dushanbe.
Finding the balance for this show is always difficult. It's been too long since we've done receiver reviews and book evaluations. But over the next few weeks, though, we'll be able to put that right. We had just under 100 comments about last week's item on digital audio broadcasting from people who said it may be a long-term goal, but not just yet. Max Zimmermann of Hamburg in Germany says he works in an electronics store, and whilst shortwave radios are not the number one item, sales have been steadily increasing in the last few years. People then must be using them.
To find out more, we picked some of the leading manufacturers. Eshmel Huzur is the president of Grundig North America. This German company has traditionally designed their radios in Fürth, near Nuremberg, and manufactured the sets in Portugal. Now, partly because of the sales results, Grundig North America has taken over the design task and marketing for all the shortwave radio production. We asked Eshmel whether shortwave radio sales are really picking up.
It's interesting you ask. Probably until about 6 or 7 years ago, Grundig had very little or no representation here in North America, and consequently I would have said probably that market doesn't exist. But it's all started with the purely accidental fashion where we started to market the Grundig shortwave radio here in North America to traditional hobbyists and those who wanted to listen. But as we start to promote the product and took it to the travelers, took it to the various other channels of distribution, we saw an unbelievable response to the extent that the response was very good in 1990, 1991, so much so that when we stopped bringing video, audio, or other traditional consumer electronic, our sales in 1991 of only shortwave alone exceeded all those high-ticket items of electronics. So you can see what was the extent of growth then. But the interesting point was, as we start to expand our marketing efforts, reaching people who are travelers through luggage dealer associations, reaching people to the people like Rand McNally who sells maps, or reaching people like stationery outlets who otherwise would never have bought any electronic items, then we saw market response to these items are phenomenal. We didn't go after someone who had already been exposed to the shortwave. We went to someone we start to sell them traveler too, which is really a more, what I would say, clock, two time zone, alarm clock, and it's got the time of the world time and local time. Yes, it happens to have 5 shortwave band. But as a result, when the first time buyers of those travelers like to listen to BBC, to Radio Nederland, Deutsche Welle, or other Radio Moscow, they became serious shortwave buyers, not all of them, but at least 10, 20, and now the percentage is increasing. This gave us a very interesting point. What we recognized then, that the shortwave market as a whole had not even been tapped. To give you the numbers, for instance, in 1993, Grundig North America shortwave, which was the only thing now we sell here in North America, grew by 44%. Over previous years, which was already beyond any records that we had achieved. Then in 1994, this growth increased to 65% in 1994.
This year, Grundig is launching a special campaign in connection with its 50th anniversary. but it's aimed at encouraging major electrical retail stores and catalog companies. They've also started advertising shortwave radios on AM news talk stations across the USA.
By radio outlets, for me, I'm talking about strictly the news outlets or talk show radio, WABC, ABC affiliate, CBS affiliate, and also NBC affiliate. Currently, we are testing in 6 different markets, from Anchorage, Alaska, to New York with the WINS, in San Francisco, KCBS, in Los Angeles, KNX. We believe by Father's Day, which is the 1st of June, or about early part of June, we would be in most major market in form of our commercials in these radio networks. Therefore, we are reaching to those travelers, we are reaching to the professionals, not as a crisis time. Shortwave nowadays is purchased here in North America as one, yes, is the information center, 2 is as the entertainment. The potential of the traditional broadcasting, meaning shortwave, I think it has not been even exploited to 10% of its potential.
Are we talking about, are you selling hundreds of thousands of radios, you tens of thousands? What sort of scale are we talking about?
Let me give you one example or several examples. Obviously, I would not like to share the exact numbers with, but one account, for instance, who had traditional, and I may name them, Sharper Image, had always bought one brand of our, one model of our competitor brand, and they never sold more than 600 pieces to maximum 700 pieces a year. Last year, that account sold over 4,500 of two models. So, yes, there are, we're talking about hundreds of thousands.
A strong sales pitch there, but some interesting figures. Very shortly, Grundig will launch 2 new models alongside its existing Yardboy and Satellite shortwave portables.
One is the step down from the YB400. It's called YB305. We are launching it right there, end of April, here in North America. This radio has got 30 memories. It's a direct entry, and it's going to be retail at $129.95 here in North America, and we intend to have them in Europe at 149 Deutschmark. The other item that is going to be introduced by latter part of this year and is going to be shown at Berlin Show is the Satellite 900.
With the weak dollar, shortwave receiver prices in North America shifting, though. Until recently, we advised listeners in the US to check the photo discount outlets in New York. They buy radios in Singapore or Hong Kong and ship them into the States for a cheaper price than conventional stores. But as Lou Josephs now reports from his car phone from downtown Manhattan, the photo stores are no longer such a bargain.
Not anymore, Jonathan. I've found that the prices are about what you would pay now in an average shortwave shop. And the other thing, if you buy it in New York, you're going to pay a fairly hefty sales tax.
How much is that?
It's 8%.
So what's the moral of the story?
The moral of the story is shop around for the best value, use the 800 numbers for the shortwave specialty shops, and you'll be amazed at some of the values that may turn up.
Is the market better than it was, let's say, 2 years ago?
At least, yes, from a standpoint of picking up values on the current crop of the new receivers, particularly the portables.
But what about across the Atlantic? In Holland, shortwave receiver sales are stable, we're told. That's also the message we're getting from London.
Hello, we'll have a shop.
Bernard Mahan is the shop manager for the bookstore inside Bush House, home of BBC World Service. It specialises in shortwave books. An important part of their sales revenue comes, though, from shortwave radios.
Well, at the moment, people seem to be replacing their sets they've maybe had for 5-10 years. We've got lots of people who are travelling over the world, and they want to keep in touch. I think there's a certain feeling that in certain areas of the world, it's important to keep in touch with the news. And shortwave radios are portable, reasonably cheap, and they work well.
Are they easy enough to tune, though?
It varies. Digital radios obviously make tuning much easier. You can use your presets. Obviously, here in the shop, we have specialised staff, so we actually preset some radios before people leave.
What about non-British people?
That's a more difficult one. We get some visitors from the continent, obviously, who want shortwave radios, but I say the vast majority are actually British people who live on the continent or in America. We get a large number of people from the Middle East and America, again, mainly after our English programs. So really the foreign language speaking visitors are quite rare.
You've also got quite a collection of media books too. Where do you keep those?
Well, we keep media books mainly on television production, radio production, so very practical books. Obviously, being based in a large BBC building, we have a large number of staff here who want to improve their professional qualifications, and also people on media courses who want to actually get their hands on a microphone, television camera, and that's the sort of area we deal with.
Do you notice that shortwave radio sales in general, are they rising, are they steady, are they going down?
I think generally they're steady. This year has been slightly different because in the last 12 months we've had some very good new sets.
And if there was one thing you could say to receiver manufacturers, what would that message be in terms of making the sets easy to use or whatever?
I think the first thing I would say is promote the radios. If a radio is well designed, most people should be able to switch it on and use it simply. Once you've designed a good radio, then you need to promote it. Make it cheap.
Talking about price, what are people prepared to spend? I mean, is it £100? Is it £50? What?
I think £100 to £180 is the average that we are taking here. I think people see it as an investment for the next 5 to 10 years.
BBC World Service Shop is currently rebuilding its mail order business. Currently, it's only serving addresses outside the European Community.
Things are moving in the more expensive shortwave tabletop range. The Drake Company of Miamisburg, Ohio, in the USA has announced it's discontinuing its R8 receiver, but replacing it in June with the R8A, offering such features as a 440-channel memory, significantly improved dynamic range, and a set that's much easier to use. The price goes up by $100 to around $1,099 in the USA, about the same in pounds sterling in Europe. More on this when we've had the chance to test a production model.
Low Electronics, in the heart of the UK, are one of Europe's last remaining shortwave receiver manufacturers. Richard McLaughlin is the managing director, and just before we came on the air, he revealed to Media Network that sales are such that they too are just about to release a new receiver.
Well, it's quite true to say that the shortwave market for us has continued to grow worldwide at a steady rate for the last 2 or 3 years now. Our present models are the HF-150 at the bottom end, the HF-225 with its companion, the Europa, which is the sort of hotted-up model, and the HF-235, which is our professional market model, up at quite a lot more money. The sales of the 150 continue apace. Probably 80% of our total manufacture is exported these days. One of the strongest markets for us is Germany and the Benelux countries, but I'm pleased to say that sales in America are picking up very strongly recently.
What about new receivers? Because in the World Radio TV Handbook a couple of years back, there was a picture of the HF-250, which then turned into Project N. Whatever happened to all that?
Well, the nomenclature changed rather. The HF-250 is in fact going to be launched at the show at Dayton at the end of this month, the Dayton Hamvention. We will have a stand, or a booth as the Americans call it there, for the very first time this year. We took quite a long time to get our marketing sorted out in the United States, but we do now have a distributor based just outside Washington, D.C., who've been on board with us for nearly a year now, and we're making our first appearance at the Dayton show. And at the Dayton show, we are going to, at long last, launch the HF-250 receiver.
So what have you done? Have you taken the HF-150 and put the preselector in front of it all in one box?
No, it's actually rather more than that. It's designed to fit into the market. It is another receiver for our range. It's designed to fit into a market slot somewhere above the HF-225 stroke HF-225 Europa and below, certainly price-wise in the UK at any rate, things like the R5000 and the Drake R8, which I believe is soon to change to a new model.
Indeed it is. That was early in the programme. Now, what about other features?
Well, what we've done, we've basically taken the feedback we've had from our customers on our present product range and lots of the things that we've been asked for. For example, an extra digit on the display so that you read to a tenth of a kilohertz. RS-232 is included as standard external control from a computer. We're finding more and more receivers we sell nowadays, we sell with computer control interfaces. So this time we built it into the radio as standard. And our keypad is becoming an infrared keypad. So you can sit in your armchair, should you so wish, at the other side of the room and control the radio from there.
But the emphasis is also on the electronics inside, no doubt, about one of the biggest problems with shortwave receivers at the moment is that they can't really cope with the high-power signals and at the same time dig out the weak ones.
That's right. So one of the improvements that we have made some improvements in the front-end design. We've increased the dynamic range and the intermod performance of it. So the new receiver is, in fact, significantly better as a radio than the present 225, which is why we have slotted it into the market where I just mentioned. In recent times, we are starting to use the Internet, and specifically the World Wide Web part of the Internet, as a marketing medium. We've actually taken a lot of the feedback that's been used in the design and manufacture of the HF250 from customer observations that we've picked up off internet. We look at the Rec Radio shortwave news group on a daily basis. There's also a very active mailing list run by a chap in California for users of our receivers, which I think has 100 plus subscribers to it now. And there is a continual current of information in both directions.
And you've got worldwide web pages?
We have indeed. We put them on about 3 weeks ago. And at the end of each week, we get a little log that tells us how many people have looked at it. Well, the first week, the log file was a computer file 200K long. And in fact, we are going to probably today or tomorrow put the advanced information about the 250, including a picture, onto our worldwide web page. Great interest to sit back and see how much feedback we get from that.
Okay, well, what's the address?
It is, if you've got a pencil, it's http://www.demon, that's D-E-M-O-N, .co.uk/lowe. And that should all be in lowercase.
Aha, and talking of the internet, there's a bit more to add now. Diana's been delving into the dark and mysterious world of HTML.
Yes. As from tomorrow, April the 21st, Radio Netherlands will launch its worldwide web pages. We've been on the internet for the last 3 years, but the ability to add graphics means we're now able to offer information in a far more attractive format. What's coming up tomorrow is just a start. Our frequency schedule will be posted in 4 languages, as well as program details and general information about Radio Netherlands. We're gradually adding booklets like Antenna Advice and Info Dutch. If you have the ability to access the pages, we would love to hear your comments and suggestions, either by email or by traditional post, phone and fax.
So that's pages in Dutch, English, Spanish and Indonesian. But what's the internet address?
It's http://www.rnw.nl/rnw.
That's http://www.rnw.nl/rnw. One other address to mention, namely Dutch and US disc jockey Adam Curry is a radio enthusiast on his worldwide webpage, www.metaverse.com, is a rather interesting development in the form of internet radio. Back to Lou Josephs.
Well, besides taking a look at his home office, you also can take a look at what's called real time. That's a new digital transmission method where if you have the software from the site at Progressive Networks in Seattle, you can actually hear interviews and music transmissions using a regular dial-up to the Internet. So if you've got a 14.4 modem or a 28.8 modem, you can actually listen to digital audio if you've got the right sound card in your PC or Mac at home.
What does it sound like?
It basically sounds a little bit better than this phone conversation.
So it's a shortwave plus without the fading?
Basically, yes. It's very similar to what M-Bone sounds like, which is the multicast on the Internet, which is also kind of noisy. But this one isn't as noisy. And you'll also find a radio station in Melbourne, Florida, that's on the Internet on M-Bone 24 hours a day. It's WAOA, and they're also using the real-time audio method to transmit as well. So if you want to hear what's going on in Melbourne, Florida at any time of the day, you can just click onto that page as well. Both of those links are on Adam Curry's Metaverse site.
So what's the point?
The point is that You won't have to go to the extent of having a special decoder to play AU files, nor will you have to download them. You can just click on and hear the program in real time. But you have to have the software.
Is that free?
Yes, it is.
This is AM Radio, where active minds get involved and interact.
We recently received a copy of the brand new edition of Radio Stations in the United Kingdom. It's produced annually by the British DX Club, and Andy Sennett's been taking a look. Andy, you spend your working life compiling information. What do you think of this particular effort?
In a word, Jonathan, excellent. And it's not a word I use lightly. There are, in fact, only a handful of publications produced by DX clubs which have become indispensable, and this is one of them. And the fact that it's now in its 13th edition proves how popular it is.
But you list British radio stations in the World Radio TV Handbook. What's extra in this particular booklet?
Well, a lot, Jonathan. In WRTH, we have space to give very basic information, such as frequency, power and mailing address. Radio stations in the UK is a 44-page A5 booklet, so it has space to go into much more detail and lists every transmitter, including very low-power relays, and in the address section, a phone and fax number is given for every broadcaster. This year, the address section is in alphabetical order by station, and that makes it extremely useful for people like me who need to access information in a hurry. One slight disappointment is that they haven't yet started to include email addresses. On the other hand, details of all the RDS codes are given.
RDS, of course, stands for Radio Data System, being a system which we've actually mentioned on Media Network before, which identifies the station you're tuned to.
Yes, and also to complete the list, there's an overview of the planned expansion of commercial radio, an outline of the current situation with regard to restricted service licenses, and a piece about the test and development station being operated by Bessemer Broadcasting on 1413 kHz medium wave and 2405.5 kHz shortwave, and that's also been mentioned recently on Media Network.
So overall, then, Andy, it's a pretty comprehensive reference?
Yes, it is, and as a bonus this year, there's a supplement listing radio stations in the Republic of Ireland. Now, there's just one other thing that I'd suggest might make the booklet even more useful, and that's an indication of the programme format of the various commercial stations. For example, you can tell from some station names what the format probably is. The name Gold usually indicates that the station plays oldies, but a name like Breeze AM clearly means something other than the windy weather in the morning, but what? In North America, DX has used programme formats to help identify stations when there are many using the same frequency, and I'd suggest that the inclusion of this information would make the booklet even more useful for medium wave and FM DXs across Europe.
Fair enough, but in the meantime, where can people get hold of a copy of this latest edition?
Well, it costs £2.50, $4 US, or 6 international reply coupons for service delivery worldwide from the British DX Club, 126 Bargery Road, that's B-A-R-G-E-R-Y Road, Catford, London SE6, 2LR in the United Kingdom.
That is a new address for the BDXE. It's the British DX Club, 126 Bargery Road, Catford, London, SE6, 2LR in the United Kingdom.
Media news from other parts of the world. In Iran, authorities have announced they're about to start dismantling satellite dishes from rooftops in Tehran. It's estimated that around 80% of people will do this by tomorrow's deadline, after which law enforcement personnel have the power to do so forcibly. Iranian authorities are concerned about a Western cultural invasion.
And on Monday, April 17th, Malaysia launched a Voice of Islam radio program to spread Islam to the Association of Southeast Asian Nations and the surrounding region. The program's designed to develop more progressive attitudes, but with an Islamic perspective, commentaries on politics and economics that made Malaysia a model Islamic nation. The program will be broadcast daily in English and Malaysian on Wisma Radio and claims to be the first Islamic radio program outside the Arabic countries. However, another station has that claim to fame. In Africa, extra troops have been deployed to protect a Kuwaiti-owned Islamic radio station in Sierra Leone, which has come under rebel attack from the Revolutionary United Front. The station has always claimed to broadcast as far as Europe, but hasn't been heard except on FM. It's located in a town called Newton, about 35 kilometres from the capital Freetown. It was set up by the government in the late 1970s, 10 years later, the Sierra Leonean government sold the radio station to the Kuwaiti-sponsored African Muslim Agency, who bought the station to promote Islam in West Africa, However, the coverage has been less than expected. Now to another coverage problem.
Jonathan, this is Don Rhodes calling from Melbourne, Australia. I'm convinced that some stations don't care if they are heard or not. For some months, we've had a powerhouse signal from Rye, Rome, via the BBC relay at Singapore, 10 to 1100 UTC on 11850. Great. So what does NHK Radio Japan do? They shift their service to Oceania from 15270 to, yes, you guessed it, 11850. So between 1000 and 1100, we hear Rye with NHK in Japanese a close second. A real mess.
Thanks, Dom. Oh, and looking at the calendar, we should be celebrating an anniversary of the world's most hyped shortwave station that never existed.
Hey, y'all, it's 10 years since the foundation of Global NDXC Radio, the station with thousands of potential listeners, but unfortunately, no transmitters. Anyway, we're going digital with my DDD system, Dixie Digital Download, the ultimate dump from cyberspace. Now, here's the address to email us. Now, where do I put that address? Gotta be around here somewhere. Maybe it's underneath my stereo shortwave modulator.
Talking of the Wild West, we couldn't squeeze in the next call last week, but here's a follow-up. First the call.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Rich Air KN6XD calling from Las Vegas, Nevada. Just want to let you know that a medium wave station out here has been granted an experimental authorization to operate during the National Association of Broadcasters Convention. The station is operating at times. The frequency is 1660 kilohertz. From my understanding, the station will be operating at 10 kW. The station has already been announced on the internet, and we've already received reception reports so far from all over the southwestern United States.
In fact, the station got further than that during the NAB convention last week. Arthur Cushion in Invercargill reports it was heard in New Zealand, using the call sign KUSA and very low power.
Yes, it has been heard on 1660, announcing power as 240 watts in authority of the FCC, and broadcasting from Las Vegas. And one of our local members, Keith Robinson, heard it using a loop. He heard it on the test on March the 24th at 0720 sign-off. A marginal signal, but some of the words are able to be copied and sufficient to get a report. But this extended band, 1600, 1700, is going to give the DXs in the South Pacific and in Europe a lot of new stations to look for. We've got some news from Palau, and the Voice of Hope is off the air at the moment. I spoke to the chief engineer, and they are installing five aerials, which will be beaming into India and China. They hope to be active by Easter. The transmitters, one on 9830 is silent, and the same as 15140 at the moment. And the third transmitter is expected later in the year. So there will be three transmitters on Palau in due course. Down in Bougainville, they have elected a parliament and some sort of government, but it's interesting, it's not on Bougainville. It's on the island of Baku, just off the coast, and that's where the seems to be the temporary capital at the moment. And they hope for a peaceful settlement shortly. But the Voice of Free Bougainville is still operating, according to reports. In New Zealand, we've got a new network started. It's called Radio Liberty. It's really a follow-on from the BBC World Service that we had. It's on five frequencies. It's operating from 1800 to 1200 with its own program, and then 1200 to 1800, it's a relay of the VOA. Public service broadcasting in New Zealand is a crisis point at the moment. The grant received by the Radio New Zealand from government has dropped from 28 million down to 19 million. And they say that this is a crisis point at the moment. Staff are leaving, and the network is no longer covering the provinces. It's purely a network from throughout the country. The government is also still looking for a way of selling its 40 commercial stations, and into that area they've taken the Sporting Service. Now, the Sporting Service is on six frequencies, and it also relays Parliament. So, you know, with privatisation as it is, it's not beyond the realms of hearing Parliament, and when the Speaker rings the bell and says the eyes to the left and the nose to the right while they have a vote, we could have one or three commercials thrown in. And an interesting signal from Thailand, Bangkok, broadcasting in English to Europe and the South Pacific, 1900 to 2000. Notice them now on 7200 kilohertz, using a lot of tourist information, promoting tourism very heavily these days as, I suppose, a means of retaining the station on the air, because it's an area in which scuba diving and all this sort of thing is being exploited pretty heavily on Radio Bangkok. And the frequency again, 7200, English to Europe, 1900-2000 UTC.
Thank you, Arthur.
Now over to our propagation wizard in Oz, Mike Bird. He's on the line from Melbourne, as usual. It's still a bit chilly here in Hilversum, Mike. What's it like in Melbourne?
Well, today it's been a very sunny day, but it's been cool, and tonight we're going down to 9 degrees. So that means we're well on the way to winter.
And what about the propagation weather?
Well, the solar flux and the geomagnetic field were pretty quiet. The solar activity was low all week. The solar flux ranged between 82 and 91. The average works out to 87.4, which equals an effective sunspot number of 30, and that is up 20 points on the previous week's level. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 14 and 5, which represents unsettled to quiet conditions. Generally, the magnetic field was well behaved, except for a few unsettled periods.
And what about between now and next week, April the 27th?
Well, we think next week could be pretty bumpy. IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will remain low. The geomagnetic field should continue quiet to unsettled until Saturday, when we expect a coronal hole will produce active to minor storm conditions until Sunday. Hopefully, the magnetic field will quieten on Monday, but on Tuesday we are expecting active conditions again due to another coronal hole. Let's hope from Wednesday the magnetic field will quieten.
Thank you, Mike. And that's all for this edition of Media Network. From Diana and myself,
have a pleasant weekend.